This is part two of a Bible teaching by David E. Ball titled, Three More Great Wars.
The oil that comes up out of this Persian Gulf from Kuwait is piped in overland pipelines. Overland pipelines. And they go up through Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, parts of Jordan, into Haifa, Israel, where the oil is filtered and then put on ships made in Japan and brought right to Hampton Roads, Virginia, where it's then unloaded and refined, and 10% of the gas that you use to get over here came from that spot there. They've got a common denominator, common interest. It's the flow of the black gold. The black gold is binding these nations together, these Arab nations, but it leaves out certain other Arab nations like Iran, for Iran's oil goes to Russia. Now look at your chart again. Which side's Iran on? Yeah, you see, they line up with those other guys. And way over here, you see the Egyptians? They're not in this deal. And neither are Libya. Or, what's that other one starts with a T there? Forget. Tagarmer. I can't even find it now. Well, anyway, those three north guys, they go up there. Libya is what I'm thinking about over here. Libya and, yeah, I messed up on that one. Ethiopia. Ethiopia, Egypt, Libya, see, they're all down here and they're not part of this thing. So if you line up those nations that are losers, they're not a part of this Fertile Crescent. But the guys that are winners are. You follow that? Now that's the only logic that I can find. And the only common denominator at the moment that I can discover is this flow of the black gold. At the moment, the oil comes up these oil wells, where it's pumped in this overland pipeline across the borders of warring nations.
Never blow up the line.
Never touched any. Not one machine gun bullet, not one hand grenade ever touches an overland. You know what I'm talking about. It's not even dug under. Just laying right on top. Now, did you ever hear of a war like that? Where one nation would allow stuff to come from another nation? Yet it's been going on like this since the early 50s. And it proves to you that there's something more important than military strategy. It's economics. And economic considerations overshadow nowadays military considerations. And poor old MacArthur didn't understand that. You see, he went to West Point and thought soldiers were to win wars. You remember the story? So they sent him over there to Asia. He was fooling around in Korea. Went over there to win the war. And Truman taught him who the commander-in-chief is, who the supreme commander is, and said, pack up your bags and go home, boy. You're not over there to win the war. This is a police action. We called it a new word. It wasn't even a war. You see, we didn't have a Korean War. We had a Korean police action. Did you know that? You know why it wasn't a war? Because if it had ever been a war, it had to be declared by Congress, and they knew Congress would not declare the war. They knew they could not get a vote out of Congress to have a war, so they had a police action. And that's what the big flap is right now throughout the executive and the legislative and the judicial branches of the government right now. The executive branch has taken to itself. And when I say the executive branch, so that nobody misunderstands me, some of you think that I'm talking about Republicans right now. I'm not. I'm talking about Democrats, too, because it was Democrats that started it. With Truman and Johnson, it's Republicans that are finishing it. So don't anybody think this is political right now. Both guys, both parties right now are involved in this thing. It's an argument about who has the power, to send troops and have wars and so forth. And we're in a new kind of a concept, but MacArthur couldn't understand. So they retired MacArthur, gave him a chance, brought him before Congress, and made a big speech. And you remember the last line of his speech? All soldiers. And the old man faded away. Because he couldn't understand. See, for all his life he was brought up to win wars. And then all of a sudden he found out that economic considerations determine what the soldiers can do. And the lives of the soldiers are expendable according to how many dollars can be saved or lost. We used to call it cannon fodder, but it's the same thing. We don't like to think that we in the United States of America have ever gotten into a situation like that, but we are. Then the Korean thing left and the Vietnam thing came along, and of course, up in Massachusetts, they even passed a law against Vietnam. If you're aware of that, the Massachusetts legislature made it illegal to draft any Massachusetts resident for the purpose of bringing to a test in the courts whether the president had the right to declare war or whether Congress could draft men for a war. Do you know what was going on? See, they didn't really feature these kind of things in the newspapers, did they? They didn't want you to know all this was going on in the newspaper. But there was lots of infighting, lots of people saying, now, wait a minute, this is not a war. You can't fight a war until Congress declares a war. It was on December the 8th, 1941. FDR went before Congress and asked for a declaration of war. Declared war against 10 countries. I bet there's not a person here that can name the 10 countries that we fought in 1941. Now, these nations, Iraq, not Iran, it's important, there's a division right up here, and the division is the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. Iraq right now is fighting Iran. Jordan's commando are fighting Hussein's forces in Jordan. On Lebanon, they're having an internal civil war in Lebanon. All the time, these same guys are supposed to be under what they call the UAR, United Arab Republic. They can't decide who's on what side. And they're fighting each other, but nobody fires a bullet into the pipeline that goes across like that. Even though they're all dedicated to eradicating Israel, and all the oil flows right into Israel. And you know why? One bullet in the side of that pipeline and you won't get another bullet. There'll be no more bullets for you if any of those end up in this pipeline. No hand grenades, no mortars. Because they're all being provided, both sides, all sides, by the economic interest that controls that pipeline. And by man, that's the way it is. It's time we began to see that it's economic interests that are controlling the wars and the battles. I say since 1941, but perhaps even that war, there are those who tell us that that war was fought for the oil as well. I was a little too young back then to know what I was reading, so I don't know about that, but I can see this pattern here just as clear, your hand in front of your face. These guys have a common interest, and isn't it fascinating that the Bible told us in Ezekiel chapter 38 years ago that they would all be bound together with a common interest. Now, the Antichrist is going to come first through commerce, then through politics or political control, and finally through theology. Say that again. See, most people expect, especially if you're Protestant, you're expecting the Antichrist to be a pope, aren't you? Mm-hmm. Come on now, you Protestants, shake your head so the Catholics will know that's what you were taught. All of us Protestants were taught that the pope's going to be the Antichrist. But I want you to know something. The Antichrist is going to first take over commerce, then politics, then theology. So if you're looking at religious systems, forget it for now. And the Bible told us in 1 Timothy 6:10, what to look at as the basic tool that the Antichrist uses to slip up behind everybody. 1 Timothy 6:10, the basic tool of the Antichrist. If you can quote it, if you got to turn to it, quick. Say it. The love of is the root of, there you go. It's the basic, number one, prime, elementary tool that the Antichrist uses. The love of what? Now, the liquid black gold, it's the most valuable asset that anybody knows of at the moment. And it's controlling politics, controlling armies, controlling bullets and hand grenades. And it's going to bring these nations together. Now, this is something that you might not want to fully admit. But do you know that God can even take that which was meant for evil and turn it to good? They were talking to David about an old man that was cursing him. He said, well, I do go cut his head off, David. And he said, no, leave him alone. It might be that God will take his cursings and turn it into a blessing. You believe that God could take cursings and turn them into blessing? Do you think he could take that which is evil and turn it into good? Well, I sure do too. And that basic evil kind of thinking about the love of money, which is the root of all evil, is going to bring these nations together. And the Fertile Crescent will again be preeminent in the whole world. At one time when the Fertile Crescent was preeminent, it was called Kingdom of Babylon. Have you heard of Babylon? And the capital of the Fertile Crescent was over here. Chaldees, right in here, see? Now, it's going to be same guys, same geographical area, but it's going to be over here in Jerusalem, the other side. The capital changes to the other side. Now, somebody said, well, why don't they just build a pipeline across like that? Well, I don't know, except this. Nobody walks across there. You just can't do it. It's such a desolate, uninhabitable, oasisless area, you can't get through. And in fact, it's called a wilderness. And a friend of mine called Abe, his father, and he lived in Tehran over here. And Abraham was his name. And he started out looking for a city whose builder and maker was God. And watch my finger. As he went from Iran to Iraq to Syria to Lebanon, down through Israel, went right to Egypt. Now, why did he go up like that instead of across? Nobody does. You can't. Even today, when they lay a pipeline, they lay it on the Fertile Crescent because you can't get across this other. I mean, it's just not a practical thing. Airplanes, you know, that kind of stuff. But for armies, traveling machines and so far, you got to go this way. It's the only way. It's been that way for thousands and thousands of years. And when they come through this area down to Egypt, because of a peculiar situation of the way the land lies, every army, every trade route, every camel, always, every camel, every trade route, always, for all the thousands of years of history, going down into Egypt, went through the Valley of Jezreel. It's the only way to get anything through the Fertile Crescent from one end to the other. Say it again. When it goes down through this area right here in Israel, it gets real narrow. And that's why one of these days, all these nations are going to be gathered right there, the most strategic spot in the Mideast. Military, economic. That's why Solomon built his stables there. Strategic spot right there. See how narrow it is?
Yes, sir.
Everybody has to go through there. And if you put your armies on the top of the mount called Megiddo, you control the valley. You know, even kids play the game King of the Hill. Because as soon as you get on top, you're boss. The guy that's on the top is the boss of all that goes around him. And so Solomon put his stables right up there on the top of Megiddo to control the valley, control all approaches, control all the nations that were trading in the Mideast. When we were over there, we were in Israel, and we got some tapestries that had been made somewhere up north of Lebanon in Syria. Weren't they, Betty? Do you remember that thing? Came all the way up from here, Damascus, Iraq. Had to go all the way up and down like this. And everything.
Damask from Damascus.
All right. If you want to see my Damask, come on over. And that's the way it is. That's their common denominator. That's why they're going to line up. I'm submitting for your analysis that they've already lined up commercially. Though politically, they're still at war. So it's only one step further. A political alliance now that will be based on their commercial alliance. The flow of the oil is the main thing. Now what happens to that oil? Next step. Thank you. After the oil gets in these big tanks in Israel, goes out in these giant ships made in Japan, and goes to the Mediterranean Sea, it passes through the Straits of what? And who controls the Straits of Gibraltar? Well, I'm thinking Spain right now. Because it was Great Britain. General Franco. Now look at your chart again. See another name there? And where's the oil going? Good old USA. And did you see another entry on your chart? What's the other name? Now, how did India and Spain? Well, it tells us, and let's turn to it now. I guess it's time to read a little Bible. I was making up for last Monday. Ezekiel chapter 38, 13. Sheba Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish, all the young lions, therefore, shall say unto thee, art thou come to take a spoil? Well, who's the thee? Go back to verse 3. Say to the Lord, Lord God, behold, I'm against thee, O Gog, chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. I'll turn thee back, put hooks in thy jaws, and bring thee forth. All thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed all sorts of armor. I'm in Ezekiel 38 right now. I'll wait. That's page 895.
883.
Oh. I was just looking for the arguers now. Ezekiel 38, Son of man, verse 2, set thy face against Gog, land of Magog, chief prince of Meshach, Tubal, and prophesy against him. Gog, Magog, Meshach, Tubal. Those are all USSR. Verse 5, Persia, Ethiopia, Libya, Gomer, Togarma. Those are all the other nations that are going to line up USSR. Now you see in verse 2, he connects all those funny names as one country. But in verse 5, it says, these other guys, many people with thee, and allied nations, or what we might call an axis because we don't like them. And see, even back here in Ezekiel, he tells you the names of the countries that are going to be part of the USSR, verse 2. And then verse 5 and 6 and 7, he gives you the names of the nations that are going to be lined up with USSR. Not part of USSR. And I don't know whether that thrills you or not, but it thrills me that the right nations are in the right section. The right words The words in verse 2 are the USSR words. They turn into them nowadays, you see. And the words that describe the other nations down at the bottom, those are the nations that are lined up, sure enough, with the Russians, just the way it is right now. Isn't that neat? Praise the Lord. That ought to prove who's boss. That ought to prove that God wrote this thing a long time ago. And you see, when I see things like this, it just makes me sit down and chuckle when I realize that God's in charge even today. Even right now. There's a reason for it. God's in charge of it. Now back over here to verse 13. Sheba, Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish with all the young lions. Now we looked up the merchants of Tarshish, and this is the best we could find. In one place the Bible says the merchants of Tarshish, Solomon sent his ships to Tarshish where they got ivory, apes, and peacocks. Ivory, apes, and peacocks. And that was India. Another time Solomon sent his ships to Tarshish, this time out the Mediterranean instead of the Persian Gulf, and when they went instead of the Red Sea. And when they went out that time, they came back with tin. And when we look on the coast of Spain, on the Mediterranean, you'll find a word named Tarshish. A city is named Tarshish, and it produces tin today. Been producing tin all these thousands of years. Tarshish in Spain produces tin, and the Bible says he went out with his ships to get tin from Tarshish. Well, if some of his ships went north, or we'll say north, I shouldn't say north, we'll just say straight west to Spain, and some of them went south and then east, India, and it was still Tarshish, this gives me a problem with the word Tarshish. When we were over in Israel a few years ago, and we went to a city called Joppa. It's also called Tel Aviv today, but it was Joppa then. And we were on a street called Straight, where a friend of mine was a while back, Pete. And Pete was on this street called Straight and up on a roof. You remember the story? Mm-hmm. Well, we were walking down the street called Straight, and all of a sudden, there right in front of me was a sign. And the sign had a replica of a ship under full sail. There was a sailing vessel, like we would call a clipper ship, with the giant sails. And right under the ship, in a cast metal, I don't know what it was, the sign, the cast metal sign, was the word Tarshish. In Israel, on the street called Straight, Tarshish. And that means shipper. One who trades with Israel in ships. Merchantman. Merchant Marine, Tarshish. Tarshish west, toward Spain, Tarshish southeast, toward Israel, toward India. And the only way to get there is under full sail on the ship. So the word Tarshish doesn't necessarily, as the best as I can figure, doesn't refer to a certain group of people or a certain area because of this conflict. But now I see it as any nation that trades with Israel in ships. And that's neat because we do. And it says those guys win. So my suggestion to you is to buy Haifa or to buy Joppa oranges. And if you can, get some good pomegranates and some bananas and things like that as you can. And in, all right. Grapefruit. Encourage the trade there because this will help us to stay on the right side. Because the nations that trade with Israel in ships are the Tarshish nations. But also says one other thing, and the young lions. The young lions are also going to line up with the good guys. And I'm submitting for analysis that we're one of the young lions, though the old lion is going the way of down a drain. Who's the old lion? England. Who's the young lions? And Canada. These guys. And I believe that we, young lions, are going to win. But the old lion goes down the drain. So I, see, when I teach this and I get to this point, some people get very uptight when I keep saying that England's going down the drain. But it is. You see, England is Ephraim. And according to Revelation chapter 7, Dan and Ephraim go down a drain. They're not blessed. They're wiped out. They lose all their inheritance. They lose all their blessings. The blessings do not go to Dan and Ephraim. Dan and Ephraim were among the 12 tribes, but they're wiped out. Dan and Ephraim did something that the other tribes didn't do. Dan provided the false priests and Ephraim the false kings. I'm going to say it again. The kingly line, according to the old man, was to come only from Judah. For the scepter shall not depart from Judah, according to the promise. But on the occasion of the separation of the northern 10 tribes, Ephraim produced Jeroboam, the king of the northern 10, and they then took the scepter away from Judah, which is against the prophecies of God. Then Jeroboam decided that Dan would provide the priests, and the priests brought the Baal and Ashtaroth religion to the northern 10 tribes. When we study the study of Baal and Ashtaroth, when we study what happened in Baal and Ashtaroth, we find out that the temples to Ashtaroth were populated by the girls, 14, 16 years old. They were priestesses there, and after they became pregnant, they were allowed to go home because the practice of the Ashtaroth religion was a sexual act, and when the girls were pregnant. But you see, if it was the normal, natural thing and everybody was doing it, it wouldn't be quite so repulsive as it is to you today. I don't know whether I'm making sense to you or not. But when society swings in certain directions, then everybody swings with it. It's not repulsive. But anyway, the girls, that's what they did. And the boys, they served in the temples of Baal, and that's where you get sodomy. Okay. So Dan produced pornography, sodomy, prostitution. And Dan, nowadays, is Danmark. And where do you get all your pornography from? Denmark, Sweden, same countries. Because those countries right now are the Dan countries. And who produces the pretender to the throne? England. Because the English throne is not a throne. The English throne is an Ephraimite throne. It is not an Israel throne. They claim they have the stone of scone. They claim to have the English, you know what I'm talking about now, the stone of scone. You know what I'm talking about? It's that stone who was it, Josh? Jacob's ladder, that he put his head on and all that kind of stuff. Crown? No, but they make it up. They make a big deal out of it. But I think that England's going down the drain, and so is the crown. And the reason is, it's an Ephraimite crown. It's a crown of the northern 10 tribes, not the crown of the southern 2. And God says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah. Now, if you're mad at me about that, well, you just have to try to get over it and remember that you have to forgive me before you pray. God can't hear you pray as long as you're mad. But as far as I can tell, Ephraim's going down a drain. That's England. And the United States, which is the Manasseh nation, is taking the Joseph blessing, and we're the guys that get the good things in the end, because we're the guys that's gonna feed the world.
Please stop your machine and turn cassette over.